I think
that piece of it. Jinx again. We'll edit this part out.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to Beam Radio.
All right. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Beam Radio. I am Sophie DiBenedetto, and I am joined today by co-host Alex Koopmans.
Howdy, howdy.
Hi, Alex. And Lars Vickman. Hey, Lars.
Hello.
Let's see. Before we jump into our main topic for today, which Lars will introduce, a topic that I'm very excited about because it is very close to my heart, I will give our usual shout out to our sponsors, Groxio, which you guys know by this point is career fuel for programmers. We always encourage our listeners to head over there, check out their latest courses and offerings. And another shout out to our sponsor, Underyard, which Lars can probably say a few words about. Lars?
Yeah. So, currently, I'm looking at getting involved with some neat open source projects that actually want to hire me to do development of sort of libraries and related tooling, as well as potentially live stream of some of that work. And if you are running a project that needs that kind of assistance, reach out. That's about it for now. And I guess I can pull us straight into the topic.
Take it away.
We have talked about this in the past, but I think there's a lot more to say, and I have recently had reason to start digging around in this because I am bringing an app towards production. Observability. So to sort of address this and get my questions answered, I handpicked this little panel. This is how you use your friends. This is how you use your co-hosts. This is how you get stuff done. You pull them onto a podcast because no one has time if we're not recording. So I don't know that everyone knows that Sophie is some kind of grand muff of observability at GitHub, but you're titled. I know that much. I guess it's a lord or lady or something. And you do a bunch of observability. I don't actually know what you do, so I'm very curious to hear more about that. And Alex, while he's probably mostly focused on baby monitors right now, which is also observability, but not what I'm looking for, he did write the Prometheus Metrics Library for Elixir. So I figured it was a good duo to tell me everything I should be thinking about with regards to observability. So, Sophie, what is it you do?
What is a Grand Moff? Is that like a...
So I stole that from Star Wars. Grand Moff Tarkin is so it's a title, yeah.
Oh well, that you got it exactly right. That's what it is. So I'm just a member of the observability team at GitHub, and our area of responsibility, as you can imagine, can tend to be somewhat large. But generally speaking, we're in charge of things related to the telemetry signals or pillars, if you will, within the GitHub engineering org. And that looks like logs, exceptions, traces, and metrics. So we provide teams the tools that they need to get those telemetry signals out of their services and get them reported to the appropriate, usually third-party destination. We try to guide people to use observability best practices. We're also currently engaged in a process of migrating to use the OpenTelemetry standard, and OpenTelemetry is something that works very well on the Beam, and there's plenty of Elixir and Erlang offerings to stick with the OTel semantic conventions and overall ways of doing things, which I'm definitely happy to see. So yeah, that's I guess a little bit about what the observability team does at GitHub in a pretty tiny nutshell.
Very nice. All right, Alex, what's your observability situation?
Yeah, so my observability story. I think it started maybe like 6-7 years ago when I think Prometheus and Grafana were kind of coming to the forefront, and they're pretty popular cloud native projects. And when those two tools kind of came about, and you can spin up an entire observability stack on your local host and test things out and play with them, That's really when things got appealing for me, because prior to that you'd have to use some SaaS offering, and you didn't have any control over it. And if you needed to play with things, you needed to submit your email or start paying for an account, and then sales reps would reach out to you incessantly. So the fact that you could just download a Docker container and run Prom and Grafana locally and start experimenting with these things was really interesting to me. And then once telemetry landed in the Beam ecosystem and a lot of the kind of related tooling, it was just kind of downhill from there. I just kept playing with it and experimenting and seeing how easy it was to really get very in-depth insight into my Beam applications. So yeah, I've written quite a few blog posts on observability, and I also maintain the PromX library, as well as some other little observability nuggets here and there.
Very nice. Yeah, I know I keep ending up on your fly.io PromX blog post when when I'm poking you about.
That one's pretty popular. There's also a more recent one where I did an example app using Grafana's Tempo, which is a tracing a service, and Grafana. And you can get all your traces out of your Elixir applications using the OpenTelemetry Erlang libraries and then pipe them over to Tempo, and then you can visualize them all that way. So I think we'll stick that in the show notes too if people are interested in tracing.
Yeah, cool. All right, so credentials confirmed on both ends. I don't really have any. Like, I've built a bunch of apps. I've used a few different observability tools, but I have never really specialized in that. I'm a generalist, and that's how I like it. But now I need to put an Elixir app in production, and that means paying a bit more attention to observability, right? What would you say are the fundamentals of observability when building a web app?
The first place I would start is just error monitoring. So something like AppSignal or something like Sentry, that is the very first place I would start. Usually that'll be like your first line of defense, because something might be wrong on your, you know, especially with like LiveView. If there's something wrong on your LiveView page, you forgot to pattern match on one particular hand event pattern, you know, that live view process will die, and you want to know about that. So something like AppSignal or Sentry will make sure that you're alerted to that problem. So I think that's usually the first step. That's usually where I start, at least.
I'll jump in on that, because I think I totally agree. I think that that's kind of like table stakes for instrumenting or monitoring your web application. I wouldn't consider it to be production ready if you won't find out when something went wrong. But I think something that we struggle with a lot as web developers is sort of this conflation of errors and exceptions. And I think we use the term like error monitoring or error handling, I think, a little bit incorrectly a lot of the time. What I see a lot of that I wish I would stop seeing a lot of is people reporting, I guess I'll say, errors as exceptions. And what I mean by that is like a SAD path as an exception. Basically reporting something to even a third-party service that is not exceptional. I want to be reporting those exceptions that raise and are not caught and are not handled. If you just want to know that something went a way that it could go, that isn't necessarily the best outcome for the user, then I think exception reporting is not appropriate for that. And I think that I'd be curious to hear what you guys think about that perspective.
For that, you clearly need a bummer monitoring tool. It's just like, yeah, this is where you go to see where people had slightly off experiences or where things were just not great.
Yeah, I think that's when you use the different log levels.
Mm-hmm. Okay, log levels. That's one way to do it for sure. That's also, I think, where I want to see metrics being leveraged. And I think that kind of gets into the distinction of when you reach for a metric and when you reach for logs. And I think, you know, we reach for logs when we want to know that a specific thing happened. And sometimes it can be helpful to know that a specific SAD path occurred, like a specific, let's say, failed login attempt, I think is an easy example to reach for. But I think more often than not, it's helpful to understand like the pattern of an occurrence over time, which is where our metrics come in when we're describing SAD path occurrences. So I want to see people, I feel like both exception reporting and probably log statements are overused as well. And I want to see people reaching more for metrics in a lot of those cases.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then actually in PromX, in most of the mm-hmm. plugins that I put together, there's always a section of like panels that are happy path, you know, good things that are happening, And then I always have a section of panels that are always like, you know, exceptions or problems that occurred in that particular library, like Absinthe or LiveView or Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about telemetry, most libraries have kind of fallen into this you know, pattern of having the event, and then there's also an error version of the same event in case there was an exception that occurred during you know, during that event's life cycle. And I think that's all kind of bundled in nicely now with the span function in telemetry. So it'll give you like the happy path, you know, everything went well and you get your measurements. And then if an exception was raised, it'll also give you some timing data, the stack trace and all that nice happy stuff.
Yeah. So error monitoring, and then it sounds like we're sliding into metrics.
Mm-hmm.
Is that about where we start then? For a web app.
That's usually my personal path. Is if I can only pick one tool, I'll go with exception monitoring first, and then since Promex is so easy to get started with, a little self pat on the back there. I would throw that in next, and then logs are also pretty easy to set up. So that's usually where what the path that I'll take.
Yeah, and that touches on one of my next questions. What tools would you use to get these fundamentals in an Elixir app? Or before we go into that, are we missing some fundamental pieces?
Some fundamental pieces of like what you would want to instrument, do you mean? Before we talk about tooling?
I know there's a ton of tooling, for example, for shipping logs around.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you need to capture sort of a complete database of all your logs since the dawn of time or not, mm-hmm. I bet that's up for debate.
Yeah, I think logs are tricky. I think just like people tend to misuse exception reporting and sort of over-report things that are not exceptional or not what I would consider to be exceptional, I think people tend to misuse logs as well. I don't necessarily say overuse. Like, I don't necessarily think that I see too many log statements that wouldn't be helpful under any circumstances. I think, you know, use your logs to get information out of your system. But I think people often look to logs and then look to performing analysis on logs to tell them things that metrics can more properly tell them. So I try to say that, like, you should use your metrics to paint you a picture of the patterns or the behavior over time. And then if you're trying to understand or diagnose details about that pattern or a specific, let's say, irregularity or abnormality in that pattern, that's where we can drill down into logs to get better visibility there. That's kind of the direction I want to see people take it in. So, for example, if you find yourself logging duration information, that shouldn't be a log statement. That should be a metric. If you're using your log to like measure the duration of a web request, let's say, a metametric instead. I'm curious maybe to hear from you guys, like, if you've noticed other patterns like that, or are there ways that you feel that you've encountered this, like, in your own experience, maybe a misuse of logs?
I will 100% echo what you just said, Sophie. I feel like logs do get mm-hmm. abused. It's sad to see, like, it's kind of treated like a third class citizen. Log all the things, you know, who cares mm-hmm. about how the logs look. One common thing I see is like the health checks are never filtered out of logs. So like the logs essentially become this giant dumping ground of just textual data. And then, mm-hmm. you know, God forbid you have to ascertain some, you know, on the fly metrics out of there. You have to write some really messy, you know, queries, whether you're in Kibana and Elasticsearch or, you know, Grafana and Loki.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make sure that data is clean, or else it's not going to do you much good. So you definitely need to make sure that it's clean. And then, make sure that you're putting the appropriate data in there. If something is time series and you could very easily break it down into some measurement and some metadata. Yeah. Just like you said, Sophie. Reach for metrics as opposed to logs. I mean, once in a while, I have written, you know, some Loki log mm-hmm. QL queries to figure out like something ad hoc, like that, you know, how many times did this, this error pop up, and literally just look for this string in the logs and let's see how many times it popped up. But that happens so infrequently that it maybe doesn't justify having its own time series data. But yeah, I think as developers, we do need to be a little bit more diligent and take care of these things. I've been at companies in the past where literally all the things were dumped into Elasticsearch, and then your DevOps team is yelling at you that the JVM apps are killing resources in the infrastructure. So everyone's got to reduce their logging, and you got to take care of these things.
Yeah, I think definitely like a huge volume of logs can definitely occur and be problematic, and you should always be cognizant of that. We had an issue with that, I think, a couple months ago. Some of our sort of like code analysis processes that we run for security scanning that will have these like sort of major spikes in processing also caused this huge, massive spikes in logs that it didn't quite cause an incident, but it approached an issue in which our logging infrastructure like couldn't really handle that peak capacity. And the solution ended up being like, you are frankly logging too many data points that you don't need to be logging, especially given the volume at which this process runs. So I think that that's always a really good thing to keep in mind. But on the topic of kind of what should I be logging and what kind of information goes into a log, I think that this is where OpenTelemetry semantic conventions can come in and really be helpful. And I'm definitely curious to get your take on this, Alex, if you've been kind of working with OTel or leveraging OTel at all, and you as well, Lars. But OpenTelemetry aims to create a standard for telemetry uses and instrumentation that is industry-wide. And there's a set of semantic conventions that are categorized by, for example, like resource attributes, or there's metric semantic conventions that you're meant to use, especially when it comes to logging, when it comes to naming your log fields. So if you can't find an OpenTelemetry semantic convention to describe a data point that you want to log, it doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't log it, but it means it might be a good time to ask yourself the question of whether or not you should log it, or ought this be instrumented with a metric or perhaps a trace instead.
All right, let's separate traces from the pack. Like, what defines a trace? I feel like I've seen logs with enough metadata seem like sort of a trace, but what is a trace in proper OTel standard? Because it's distinct from a metric, I get that much, and people talk about it as distinct from logs, so I think I might be missing what people mean by trace, because I don't think all runtimes offer sort of the tracing facilities of the Beam, for example, so I'm not sure they're talking about that kind of tracing. So what's a trace in that context?
Yeah, so tracing in general is just a way of kind of tracking, let's say, like application requests or processes in your application as they flow throughout the entirety of your system. And the information that's in a trace is comprised of spans, and like a span is kind of each step through, you could say, that process, as I think tracing a request lifecycle makes the most sense. So each step through that request lifecycle, and a lot of the information you might find in a trace is not dissimilar from what you would find in a log. But the benefit of tracing is that it allows you to leverage the third-party services that are specifically designed for tracing to get the kind of, I think, rich data and analysis that you're absolutely not going to get from logs. And I'm sure, Alex, that you have thoughts on this as well. Like, we use Lightstep, and you can just see everything from, I think, the most basic and useful use case of tracing, which is how much time is my request, let's say, spending in each part of my system, inclusive of how much time is it spending, let's say, on specific database queries. It can really help you understand bottlenecks and kind of how to increase the efficiency of your system overall. But it can also show you things like dependency graphs for the different services that a request might touch as it flows through your system. You can aggregate this data, for example, in Lightstep supports a feature called notebooks in a bunch of interesting ways. So I think what you can do and what you can learn from tracing really outstrips what you can learn from logs in most cases, when it comes to performance especially.
Yeah, it seems like tracing is kind of a blend of logs and metrics, right? Because
it's a nice way to say it.
Yeah, it's like the aggregated, collection of events that happened in your system, and maybe this could be just one component of your system, or if you're running microservices, it could be events that transpired across all the all the services in your system. But it, you know, like you said, it shows you some metadata, shows you all the, you know, all the events that occurred, how long they took, which ones kind of triggered other events. And the example that I used in that Fly blog post was an N+1 query, because I feel like it's a really easy one to visualize. And so you make, I made two different endpoints. One was a slow, non-N+1, one was an N+1. And with the N+1, you can see this waterfall of database calls that are being made. You can see, you know, some of the metadata around those calls, how long each of them took. And then it's very easy to visually see, oh, I have a database problem here. But I think since it's a blend of the two, right, logs or tracing being a bit of logs and metrics, I think you also have some of the problems that come along with each of those. So like storing tons and tons of traces can be just as bad as storing tons and tons of logs. So like I know with the Erlang Hotel package, I think there's a config there for collecting only a sample of your traces. So you won't collect 100% of your traces. Maybe you get like 50% or 25%. You could fine tune that based on how much traffic your application is receiving. But there's definitely a ton of value there. And I think one of the things that I'm trying to get more into, especially with PromX, is I would love to see exemplars being used in metrics and telemetry events or tracing events. So in that way, you can tie back one particular, Prometheus data point, for example, to a trace that occurred in that same time span that maybe caused that problem. So maybe if you see an anomaly of database queries taking forever, you can, in Grafana, click on that exemplar and go from the Prometheus metric exactly to a trace that that was an exemplar of that event. So I think also having the ability to jump between the different pillars easily and get information, that's more well suited for each pillar, I think is a huge step forward.
Yeah, and I think tracing doesn't get as much love as logs and metrics and exception reporting, I think, from most of us just kind of working in the application or the web development space. And I think it's because, I don't know, I mean, it is a little bit harder to grok, I think. It requires you to gain a deeper facility with some of these third-party tools, whatever your tracing provider of choice is going to be, than something like logs and even metrics. I've noticed that people don't reach for it as much. I'm not as comfortable with it as I am with just like emitting a log or a metric. So one thing that I would love to see from the Beam community especially is more resources on how to leverage tracing on the Beam and what it really wins us. I feel like I've seen a lot of talks at this point, and I've probably given a talk myself on this topic of, or at least I've written like a couple blog posts on this topic of telemetry within your Phoenix application, and I'll kind of hit the highlights and people with the highlights like, here are logs, here's metrics, here's a little bit about traces. I would love to see a deeper dive. I think that's something that the community could really benefit from, and that would also help us kind of stand out in terms of the value that we as Beam developers deliver, because I think tracing is a really powerful tool for instrumentation, and I think it can help especially larger organizations with a lot of services really frankly save a lot of money, because you can really see what's expensive in terms of time and resources.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the Beam is very uniquely positioned, especially given that all these tools kind of rely on the underlying telemetry library. The fact that we have this one unifying yet very lightweight library, and everyone kind of conforms to the same patterns and specification, I think is a huge win over maybe other ecosystems where everything is fragmented. Everybody has kind of their own way of doing things, right? Like I don't think in the Node ecosystem, like Express and SQLize use the same telemetry libraries under the hood. And so there's not a very easy way to kind of tie those two together and get, let's say, tracing data. Versus with Elixir, I mean, the Erlang OTel library is, I think it's pretty well established now. And I think they're working on getting like OTel metrics into there now. But like from a tracing perspective, it seems pretty robust, even right now. And in that blog post I wrote, I think it was just, add a couple of dependencies to Mix add a couple of like initialization functions in your application.ex file. And the hardest part, honestly, was just standing up Tempo, Grafana, and then making sure that Tempo had somewhere to store all the tracing data.
I'm going to jump in there. I think that piece of it that you just said, the hardest part was standing up the infrastructure. I think that is part of why tracing is not as widely adopted as it probably could or should be, because that is definitely a burden, a hurdle rather, for people to get over. Yes, you still have to like figure out where you're sending your logs to really deal with logs in production, ditto for metrics, but collecting trace data and sending it someplace that you can interact with it is, I think, harder than like emitting logs to Splunk or whatever your flavor of choice is.
Yeah, I think most of that stuff with logs is taken care of by your, you know, quote unquote DevOps team, whether you have a DevOps team formally or informally. But like with logs, just go to standard out and you can kind of assume that, hey, wherever this thing is running,
exactly,
if I dump to standard out, something will come get that, you know, that log that I just printed out. So I think like that barrier to entry is ridiculously low for logs. With Prometheus, I think, again, not to shamelessly self-promote, but I think Promex helps quite a bit, because you know, you add a couple lines to your supervision tree, you get kind of my opinion as to what data points are important out of, you know, Phoenix and Absinthe and LiveView, et cetera, et cetera. And then I also give you the accompanying Grafana dashboards. So you start you know that barrier to entry, I think, has been reduced with Promex. I would love to work on something with traces to kind of lower that barrier to entry too. But yeah, I think it's the fact that it's just a little bit harder to do these dependent things with tracing and whatnot.
I mean, it's complex, more complex data structures. And with metrics, one thing I believe you do with Promex is that you sort of aggregate them and sort of you keep a subset of everything that's happened in the system. You keep a sort of aggregation and it's bucketed and summed and all that. And that means you can reduce the complexity of keeping all of the information. But when you're doing a trace, I mean, if that sort of combines the ideas of a log with and sort of the... you can't really aggregate a trace, I guess, because it's a slightly more complex data structure. It's almost like a log. There's an event bit that's there saying, what is it? What step are we at? And then there's a bunch of metadata and probably some numbers associated, timestamps at least. And suddenly you're dealing with something more complex. I mean, you can encode it as a log line if, like, you can certainly format it and parse it out later or something, but it's just a bit more involved, it seems like.
Yeah, I think that's how things kind of started off, where like every log line would have like a ref number or something, and after the fact you'd go back and kind of aggregate all these things that had the same ref number, and then that was kind of your like on the fly trace as to what happened for that one particular request. But yeah, I think it was kind of introduced when, you know, in the microservices craze, where you'd have like a sidecar in your, you know, your Kubernetes pod or whatever, and everything would go in and out of that sidecar, and then you can kind of get this like service mesh level tracing, which was nice. But I think now getting into the application level tracing, I think is really valuable, because I think the microservices craze has kind of cooled down. And monoliths are kind of cool again. And so your service mesh trace is going to be pretty boring. It's going to be like maybe a load balancer and one backend service that picks up the request. So I think getting application level tracing is, I think it's proving to be a little bit more fruitful now and getting some more love.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
So what tools should I be throwing into this Elixir app as it goes out the door?
Well, I'm curious to hear first, I guess, more about like what is this app or whatever you're allowed to tell us of it. or even like, is it a web app?
Yeah, web app, your average SaaS, it's just gonna disrupt the world. That's what it's gonna do, but it's a web app.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think if you're
there's some live view, there's some admin UI, there's some REST APIs, there's some channels. There's a little bit of everything. But it's mostly Phoenix and some front end code.
That makes sense. So I think you're in luck then, because you can use the native telemetry tooling that is kind of baked into Phoenix at this point. And it's backed by Etz, which I think is very cool. And you can, I'm actually going to add this to our show notes, but there's a series of Elixir School articles that I put together. Those are like years and years ago, but I think that not much has probably changed since then. But you get a lot of instrumentation for free coming out of Phoenix and LiveView. There are telemetry events that are emitted by those libraries. And the telemetry offering that you can use within your Phoenix application or even your plain Elixir application makes it really easy for you to subscribe to those events and do whatever it is that you want to do in response to them. Emit a metric, emit a log statement, report an error, etc. So I would start with looking at the telemetry suite of libraries.
Are they used for the live dashboard stuff, or is that
separate? Yep, 100% correct. Yeah. And the live dashboard stuff is really neat because what it does seems really magical, but it's nothing that you can build pretty much all of yourself with very little effort because of how the telemetry library makes it easy for you to subscribe to events that are emitted from LiveView and do something with those events. In the case of the live dashboard, it's, you know, graph them.
Yeah, live dashboard is usually one of the things I throw in right from the get-go. Although, is it part of the generators now? I think you actually get it with the generators.
Yeah, you just get it.
Yeah, all you have to do is like uncomment the route or something, or maybe not even anymore.
Is that it? All right. I haven't made a new Phoenix app in a long time because I have some, you know, quote-unquote legacy Phoenix apps.
Super legacy.
That's usually a good place to start. And I mean, the only downside there is everything is ephemeral. So everything is, you know, as soon as you refresh the browser, you lose all your data. I think it's great for ad hoc debugging and definitely for like local hosts. If you're just like, how long does this, you know, this take if I make all these requests? So like, you know, very off the cuff, nothing formal load testing. I think it's perfectly capable there.
It does have pluggable storage backends. So in this app, we've actually at one point spent all of like 10 minutes probably with the docs for how to store a bunch of events, like maybe 300 pieces of metrics or whatever, in memory, in just a rolling log, essentially.
Oh, so it keeps them in like Etz or something, and then just.
In that case, it's probably Etz. I don't remember, but you can also, of course, plug it into Ecto if you like, or make up your own thing, which means you can trivially add a persistence layer to it. Whether it's a good persistence layer is where it gets challenging. But of course, also there's limitations. Like Live Dashboard doesn't have a ton of filtering and digging around and like exploring data is not what it's for. It's for a quick sit rep on an application. But I spent a long good chunk of time just remembering how to sort processes by memory use, and then I realized like I could have just logged into Live Dashboard and
I have used that to debug problems more than, you know, 10 times. And these are very important problems. Like, you know, one gen server, let's say, was like constantly accumulating data, and I was doing a very poor job of flushing that data or summarizing it or whatever. And I could very easily go to Live Dashboard, filter by processes that are using too much memory or Etz tables that are using too much memory. I can, with sniper accuracy, figure out exactly where the problem is in my system. So it's definitely a tool that I would throw into pretty much every app, because it has no overhead. The only overhead it adds is when it's actually running. So why not include it?
Anything else that should be packed into that an app before it goes out, or that sort of just something you always end up adding?
I'm a pretty big Grafana fanboy, so anything Grafana I will use. I really love Loki for logs. The JVM alternatives I wasn't a huge fan of, just from an admin perspective and making sure that they're up and running and whatnot. So Loki is usually what I use for logs, Tempo for traces, and then Prometheus for metrics. And then the nice thing is with Grafana, you can visualize and see all three pillars of observability from just one web portal. So I think, and I'm not a paid spokesman for Grafana. I just think they're good tools.
And free.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the killer value propositions, is that you can run all this stuff locally and make sure it works. And, you know, not everybody on your team needs, you know, keys to your production New Relic account, and they have to worry about stomping production, you know, tracing data, or like intermingling local host data with that. Like, you just spin up the entire stack locally with Docker Compose or, you know, or whatever, and with confidence you can be happy that everything works locally, all your metrics are being collected, all your metrics are being plotted, and then when you ship to production, it should work just the same.
Not too shabby.
Just to kind of add some additional thoughts to your question, Lars, like, what tools should you be reaching for to kind of make sure your app is production ready? I think, you know, the stack itself is going to be up to your team, your organization. You've got contracts with Datadog, whatever. But one thing I'd like to see people do more, and my team has just instituted a process where we're going to try to be a little bit more rigorous about this, is the idea of doing like a game day scenario before you put a new service live, kind of doing one of these kind of, sometimes we'll call it wheel of misfortune, like simulate something horrible going wrong in the application and sort of putting someone in the hot seat, and do they have what they need to deal with it? So was there a monitor that fired to let them know that this horrible thing went wrong? Did that monitor have a playbook attached to it? While going through that playbook, were we able to get the information we needed from available telemetry, from metrics, from traces, from logs, in order to find out what we needed to diagnose and resolve the incident? I think those are great litmus tests to help you understand if you feel like you have the observability that you need before you go live.
That's a really good point, Sophie. We didn't even talk about alerting.
Yeah, let's talk about alerting.
Yeah, that wasn't in my question, so this is a good thing. I did start looking into alerting, but I didn't put it in my questions. How do you go about alerting? Because it can get really annoying if you do it wrong.
Yeah, I think, so I haven't actually set up a lot of like alerting specific tooling lately, because I've just been at, you know, more smaller scale startups where we don't need as many robust things. Hopefully my CTO is not listening here, but I mean, at the moment we have a lot of like dedicated Slack channels. So if something's going wrong, you know, we'll get a Slack message there. You know, we're not using anything complex like PagerDuty or whatnot. But and I think that works fine at certain scales. But then, you know, once you get to like GitHub scale, I'm sure Sophie, having a Slack channel alert you that something's wrong is probably not a scalable solution. You probably need something like PagerDuty, where you can rotate who's on call.
Yeah,
you know, three ways to reach that person.
Yeah, exactly. And then who to page if you couldn't get them.
Yeah,
I think the concept of severity level is really helpful there. So at GitHub, we have three severity levels, which I think is fairly common. We've got Sev 3, 2, and 1. A Sev 3 alert goes to a Slack channel that no one ever looks at least as far as my team is concerned. I think Sev 3 alerts are less helpful from the perspective of alerting than they are from kind of like looking at trends over time when you are diagnosing the health of the system. For Sev 2 alerts, that goes to the Slack channel, and it also opens a GitHub issue. Other companies may, like if you use Jira, maybe it opens a Jira ticket or like a Zendesk ticket, whatever. And then it assigns that issued to the person who is on call according to the PagerDuty schedule. And then our Sev 1 issue is like, yes, you get paged through PagerDuty, your phone rings, even if it's on silent, it wakes you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're responsible for fixing this problem. And it also opens the GitHub issue in it, and it slacks as well, just kind of like covers all the bases. I think it can be hard to tell sometimes what should be Sev 2 and what should be Sev 1. Now we're veering into like SRE territory, so I'm going to take off my observability hat and put on my SRE hat. How do you determine the severity levels of your incidents? It depends on the agreements that you've set with your customers. What are your service level agreements? What are the promises that you've made to your customers regarding the behavior and the uptime of the products and the systems that you offer them? And what are your objectives, your service level objectives, your SLOs that underlie those agreements? So if you have promised your users that 98% of the emails that they ever trigger from using this feature will always get sent, then that helps you understand what thresholds to kind of alert at. If we've sent fewer than 98% of the emails today, then we should, or in the past 5 minutes or whatever evaluation window you want, then we should alert. But then should that be step one or step two? How important is that? Kind of is a little bit up to the discretion of your engineers. It's a little bit up to the discretion of your product managers and the folks on the business side who are going to help you determine, what it is that you need to offer your users. How important is it when something goes wrong? It's a hard question to answer for sure.
Yeah, I think that one becomes far more like subjective and on a per business case basis. Like one business is not going to have the same SLAs as another business, and that's something that the organizations need to come together, engineering and product, and figure out what's important, what isn't. We can't, like, there's mm-hmm. no way you can page everyone about everything all the time. That's not a feasible route to go. So yeah, like you said, so mm-hmm. if we figure out what the SLAs are, making sure those are written down and explicit with everybody, and then getting the people or on the engineering team on board with that and giving them the tools necessary to fix problems as they arise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think another good guideline to keep in mind to avoid what you might consider to be alerting fatigue is alert on things that are actionable. So if somebody would get an alert, but then there's nothing they can do about it, that shouldn't be alerted on. If that shouldn't happen, right? Okay, we need to alert on this thing, then you should figure out how to make sure that this problem isn't occurring, but alerts should be actionable. There should be some steps that the person who's informed can take to make that alert shut up again.
This is all very good and serious. I'm just hearing, make very few promises to customers.
Yeah.
Limit what you promise.
Under promise, over deliver.
Always.
Good strategy.
But I think, the core telemetry set of libraries that you can take advantage of in your Phoenix app, kind of back to Lars' earlier question, like I have this Phoenix web app that I've built for this client and I need to prepare to deliver it to them. When can I be sure that it is instrumented enough to kind of, not be shitty of you, I guess, to be like, here, it's done. Here you go. You can operate it from now on. A lot of those questions on like what should be alerted on and what do we need visibility into, you're not going to be able to answer from certainly like a consultant perspective. And a lot of times engineers themselves can't even answer from an engineering perspective because it depends so much on what the customer's needs are and what agreements the business wants to enter into with those customers. But I think especially when building Elixir apps, especially when building Phoenix apps, the telemetry libraries give us all the tools we need to provide the level of instrumentation that might be required by the business. So understanding, I think just like omitting the telemetry events, by which I mean to say specifically the Elixir telemetry instrumentation events, not like a generic metric or a log, but omitting those events and then leaving that API open for the future operators of that system to describe what they care about and what they want to subscribe to, I feel like that's a really strong place to leave a product in. So what you do with the Elixir telemetry libraries is you instrument an event. Sometimes we'll say publish an event, but it's backed by ETS, not any kind of PubSub or Elixir message passing. So it's a little confusing to say publish. Instrument an event, like publish, put out an event that a thing happened, and then just ignore that event for now. Later on, someone may decide, hey, actually, it really matters to my users that a login attempt failed. Like, how can I get that information out of my system? Well, if you've already published a telemetry event just in the closed system of your Elixir app that this happened, later on, somebody can write a very small amount of code within your Elixir app to subscribe to that telemetry event and respond to it however they've decided is important for the business. Maybe they need to respond to it by fully reporting an exception. Hopefully not if it's a failed login attempt, but to each their own. Maybe they need to respond to it by emitting a log statement or incrementing a counter metric of like failed login attempts. You're kind of giving them the levers that they can pull later on, depending on the needs of their business. And that is such a common theme in Phoenix. It's such a common theme in LiveView that the frameworks are giving developers the tools they need to write like the smallest amount of code to meet the needs of their business. You don't have to figure out, you know, how to extract this information from your system. It's pretty trivial to hook into that moment in time that a thing has happened with these telemetry events. It is up to you as an application developer who is a human person who can liaise with your business to determine how you want to respond to that event.
Another thing I'll add there is that most library maintainers are also very like open to adding additional telemetry events to their libraries. Mm-hmm. Like I know I've gone through and I added a bunch to like Broadway a few years ago. I think recently I added one to Phoenix for like a telemetry event to fire off when the endpoint supervisors brought up, which was just something that I needed to attach to. So most library maintainers are, you know, are really open to adding additional telemetry events because they're so lightweight and they don't necessarily impact performance in a negative way in the overall library. So if there's ever something that you need in a library, open up a PR, open up an issue, and you know, mm-hmm. just try to make it happen. And most people will merge that in without any problems.
Mm-hmm. And if you are a library author or maintainer, just like instrument all the events because it's basically free. You're not dictating that a certain expensive operation should happen when an event is emitted. You're just emitting these important events from your library and you're leaving it up to the users of your library what to do with those events. And I actually have in front of me right now, this is what I'm working on today. At GitHub, we have an internal client library that we use for our messaging system that's backed by Kafka. And we are trying to move all of our logging across the board to conform to OpenTelemetry semantic conventions. So I went back and forth because this library was emitting some log statements. This was how it was informing users that like things were happening as we're consuming messages and producing messages and starting up Kafka clients were emitting log statements. Pretty reasonable, right? Well, the way that it's emitting log statements is just with an unstructured Ruby standard logger. It certainly doesn't play nice with an OpenTelemetry structured logger that can conform to the OTEL semantic conventions. So my choices were use an OTEL semantic logger in this library or do something else. And I didn't want to use an OTEL semantic logger in this library because it's a heavyweight dependency. And the library itself, ideally in my mind, should be fairly agnostic about what the users of the library need to do with telemetry instrumentation or telemetry information rather. The library itself shouldn't care that the users of this library happen to be engaged in an organization-wide migration to OTEL semantic convention. That is not the business of the Kafka wrapper library. So I used a similar pattern to what Elixir's telemetry libraries offer, which is the active support instrumentation pattern. So now instead, this Kafka wrapping library is emitting these instrumentation events when a thing happened. Okay, we're starting up a Kafka client. I'm going to emit an event to describe it. We're processing a batch of messages. I'm going to emit an event to describe it. And then what I'm going to do from like our github.com monolith is I'm going to subscribe to these events and I'm going to pick and choose what information I want out of that event payload. And I'm going to log them with an OpenTelemetry semantic logger there. And I'm going to use the semantic log fields that we want to use to describe this information. So the library can stay really slim and it can be really agnostic of what a user might want to do with that information. In my case, I happen to want to log it in a manner that is compliant with OpenTelemetry semantic conventions. And that's something that is very supported, I think, and kind of like the way to go with your Elixir libraries as well. And the telemetry offerings in Elixir make that possible. And that's what you see. That's what Ecto does. That's what Phoenix does. That's what LiveView does. All of these libraries emit these telemetry events, and you can find them in the source code. They put these events in an ETS table, essentially, and you can, your application can write a couple lines of code that will pull those events from the ETS table and do the thing with them, whether it's log, emit a metric, you know, add something to a trace span, etc. And it's the telemetry library that provides the API for emitting those events. I'm using air quotes here for people that are just listening, because all it's really doing is putting in an ETS table and subscribing to those events, more ETS quotes, because all it's doing is reading them from an ETS table.
Yeah, and do I have it right that it's not really putting the events in the ETS table, it's putting handlers for the events?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you're storing this pair. The key is like the event name, and the value is like literally a handler function. And that's part of what gets read from the ETS table, so that it looks up what to do to respond to the event. So when you start a subscription, which is what you would do to say, hey, this is what I want to do to handle this event, what you're doing is you're storing the event name and handler function pair in an ETS table, but the telemetry library abstracts that away from you.
Yeah, I think the formal wording from the telemetry docs was dynamic dispatch.
Okay, and, yes.
Because you could dynamically add new handlers, you could dynamically remove handlers, but I think PubSub is just an easy way to think about it. Because at the end of the day, that's what
it feels like, PubSub, but you really need to make sure that your handler is pretty quick, because it's not PubSub.
So yeah, that's actually one thing that's important to bring up is, your handler is running synchronously. So if you attach an event handler, let's say on the Phoenix event that's firing right before your HTTP request is serviced, and it takes 10 seconds to run, now all of your requests take 10 seconds to run. But the nice thing there is you can very easily opt out of the synchronous path and just take all that metadata, toss it off to a task, and do something async. So I think also lies the beauty of telemetry, because going from synchronous to async, very easy. I think going from async to sync is practically impossible. Like, you're not going to go back into a process and go tell, hey, you need to yield while I do this thing. So I think the fact that the authors of telemetry, I think Chris McCord wrote the first kind of version of telemetry, really did it right. And you now have that option. You can just do it synchronously, or you can take that event, toss it somewhere else and deal with it async from the library's kind of execution path. And one other thing I wanted to bring up is, I think something that embodies what you just talked about, Sophie, is the OBIN library. There's the OBIN telemetry module, and maybe we'll post those docs in the show notes. But yeah, Parker did a great job of outlining all the events that OBIN emits. And he also provides a default logger. So he kind of dog foods it there. So you attach this default logger, it'll attach to all the telemetry events that are being fired by OBIN, and it'll log everything. And again, if you have some needs that are very
different.
That's
exactly what I'm doing in
the software library. That's exactly what came to mind.
That's Sophie. The default behavior of the library is that I have this log streamer, and it's going to just like spit out the log. And then in our github.com monolith, I'm going to opt out of that default log streamer because I want to use an open telemetry logger and get all those nice semantic conventions.
And I think that pattern embodies the Beam, right? Because the Beam will give you all the tools necessary, but then all the escape hatches are very clear, very easy to get to. You don't have to do a lot of hoop jumping, and then you can tailor it exactly to your particular use case.
There are a class of tools that are available on the Beam that I'm not sure we'll be able to get deep into, but I'm not even sure if they fit within observability as a sort of usual, as it's usually discussed. And it might be because they're so unusual and hard to do. For example, Erlang has a tracing functionality, which is an entirely different thing from what we've been talking about with sort of open telemetry style traces, where it's just you can trace and you can get the execution of function calls in a running Beam instance. One member of the community recently released Orion, which is a dynamic distributed, what is it, like a tracer. So it can essentially give you statistics, histograms of the execution of a function within your system as your system is up. And you can just go in and like, oh, I really want to know the performance of io.inspect in my app and see how it's doing. And you will get sort of that for a period of time. And you can turn it off and on again and that kind of thing, like doing things at runtime. I know it's something I've used heavily when sort of digging into problems and trying to figure out why something is happening. I don't know if that's a different thing than observability. It's veering into debuggability, I guess.
I think those are so closely related.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Erlang tools are like one layer, like lower level than the telemetry library, for example. Right, like when I was working on the Livebook process module, so you can the Keynote process module, so you can visualize like supervision trees, and you can actually also visualize like all the messages that are passed across processes. Like that stuff is super cool, but I think to your point, Lars, that's more of a debug tool as opposed to probably something that you'd want to stuff in your tracing service. I could only imagine how much data that would generate if you were tracing every single message that was passed on the beam.
Yeah, I don't think that's the idea. But yeah. the thing with the Erlang things, you could use them for sampling. For example, you could identify, oh, this is being slow. Let's capture a few calls of that. This is acting up in some weird way. Okay, let's capture a bit of that. There are things I think this runtime can do that are just not possible otherwise. Like, for example, I explored a few tools that I believe will serve us when production hits. And for example, Recon is just a nicer way of doing traces, the type of tracing that Erlang already supports. It's just some nicer tooling on top of that and helps you avoid shooting yourself in the foot with tracing. Because, of course, you can ask it to send you every message and every function call that happens in the entire beam. And that's generally a bad time. That's how you bring down production, by trying to observe it.
Yeah, I think that's a pitfall for sure. I'm glad you phrased it that way.
Are there other tools in that vein that you've been meaning to explore or that you've had a chance to play with? I think that this will be the last thing we discuss before wrapping up. And I don't know if you've had a chance to dig in. I know GitHub, it's not a lot of Elixir.
Yeah, unfortunately not so much on my end, but I'm definitely curious to hear what you guys are interested in.
I used to use Observer CLI a lot, which is kind of like a terminal user interface for Observer. But I've kind of phased that out over time in favor of Phoenix Live Dashboard. We could probably stick it in the show notes, but it was definitely useful in environments where I can get an SSH session to the server, and I can run a remote IEX session, and that was kind of it. That's all I could do. So there, it was very, very handy, just to kind of get those same stats out of IEX that I could in Live Dashboard. So if you have some system constraints and maybe that's your only option, I would probably stuff Observer CLI into my mix.exs file. But I think we pretty much covered all the tools that I use day to day. Recon I would definitely put in every Elixir app. I mean that's one of the beauties of the beam. You can put all these things in there and they don't necessarily slow down the app or do anything. But when you need them, they're there for you, and they can really get you out of a pinch.
Yeah,
I really love that about the Beam ecosystem, and I think the telemetry library and the approach to instrumentation is another example that the Beam is an ecosystem that treats observability like the first class citizen that it is, instead of like an afterthought. And I think that so many languages and frameworks don't really have what I've considered to be first class solutions, or like all arrows pointing to like this is the way to do it type solutions, and the way opinionated, I guess, and out of the box solutions the way that the Beam does. And I think that that is like a huge advantage for working on the Beam.
Not to start a flame war.
Oh no.
What's the observability story in Golang? Because we have our
I'm not gonna say that it's terrible, because I frankly don't know. I haven't been really writing Go much this past year, which is fine by me. I mean, there are some good OTel offerings for Golang. I think there's some Golang open source community members that are very involved in the open telemetry space. So there is like an open telemetry Go library that gives you what you need to do logs and traces that conform to open telemetry. So there's definitely like tooling that's there, but I'm not aware of what I really appreciate in Elixir, which again, really is this telemetry suite of libraries that allows you to do this dynamic dispatch that we've been talking about. And that kind of offers that as a solution to developers for instrumenting their applications. The analog that I've seen to that in other languages is active support instrumentation in Ruby, which again means you need the active support dependency, which is relatively heavyweight compared to something like the telemetry library dependency. So I have really not seen an equal of telemetry, like the telemetry library, capital T, not like lowercase t telemetry as a concept. I haven't seen that equivalent of that elsewhere.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was asking, because I've been far removed from a lot of other ecosystems. I've been doing Elixir pretty happily now for almost 8 years, and mm-hmm. I haven't really reached anywhere else for any, I would say, production grade things. Do I write the one off, you know, Python script or JavaScript mm-hmm. script? Yes, but I haven't deployed any actual production apps that are not Elixir in quite a long time. So I'm curious how does it compare? Because maybe I have blinders on. Maybe it's better elsewhere, and I don't know. But I don't think so.
I don't think it is.
Last time I instrumented Python, I can tell you that was for New Relic, and those libraries did a lot of monkey patching, because that's how you get things into things that are already there. It's like, yeah, this library needs more events. I guess I'll just shove them in there. It's a nasty situation.
So it doesn't sound like things have changed much since the last time I used a lot of other ecosystems. Okay, good to know.
I guess these open telemetry approaches actually might be a little bit of a limiting aspect to what could be done with sort of Elixir and Erlang. I think it's very good that the industry is sort of figuring out, like, these are the different things that we need to be doing, and this is how you do them.
Mm-hmm.
But they are also coming from runtimes that are
mm-hmm.
generally like, oh, we want to ship, sort of we want to introspect what's going on. Yeah, you better ship some new code, I guess. While the open telemetry events, or the telemetry events from the Elixir and Erlang telemetry libraries, you could just log into your production instance and add some new handlers at any time to start grabbing new pieces of information, which is a very mm-hmm. interesting, a very different capability. Another package that I noticed when I was exploring and sort of a prequel to this Orion thing that was recently released is XProf by AppliScale. It's not very up to date, but it apparently does build if you don't pick one of the versioned versions. And it's built for Erlang, so it's not Elixir specific. But that also does a bunch of dynamic tracing, where you can get information about running code for a period of time in production. And it seems super interesting. I think we're going to explore it. And I wonder what kind of tools could be built for the Beam that might not be possible or feasible in other runtimes. But I guess that's a question for another time.
All right. So this has been a fantastic conversation, where I get to talk about what I already talk about all day, every day, which is actually quite fun. Thank you so much for bringing this up, Lars. Yeah, I've actually been really mired in a lot of this instrumentation stuff, like in the past week or so, and kind of batting my head against this instrumentation pattern that I wanted, right, where we're sort of like emitting and subscribing to events. And this conversation has like reminded me where this pattern I think really shines and helps me feel like I picked a good way forward. So thanks, guys. Thank you, Lars. Thank you, Alex, for sharing all of your thoughts and your expertise and your experiences, especially from your work on PromX. And thank you for your work on PromX, which is a great open source tool. Shout out to our sponsors once again. Thanks to Groxio and Underyord. And I actually do have one announcement that I'm very excited to share before we wrap up, which is that the MPEX conference is coming back to NYC for the first time since, pre-pandemic, before the world changed. MPEX is really the premier, classiest regional Elixir conference that I think you'll attend in the United States. We try to make it really kind of special and stand out in terms of the community and the environment that we offer to our participants. So we've always picked smaller and more intimate venues. We've always tried to incorporate things that feel very true to the cities that we have held these events in, whether that's music, art, etc. This year, we're going to be holding it in Brooklyn, in Gowanus, actually, at a great venue called Littlefields. It's going to be on June 9th, which is my actual birthday, so you guys must attend. Gifts are, of course, optional. And our CFP is open. We'll put the link in the show notes. I would love to see our listeners there. And I guess we haven't talked about this yet, but maybe we'll do some discounts or some giveaways or something as we get ready to open up ticket sales. So maybe stay tuned for that as well. All right, and we'll catch you guys next time on Beam Radio.